I was interested in Buddhism only through reading Ginsberg. Pretty much, I was into transcendental meditation, and that was a phase. And my reading primarily was Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. He was the one that kind of captured my Buddhist imagination or triggered that.
That's poet Peter Marti talking about his initial introduction to Buddhism through Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, a Tibetan teacher who is known as the greatest innovator of Buddhism in the West. He arrived in America and ignited many Westerners, including famed poet Allen Ginsberg, who thus in turn inspired Peter. The illustrious Gregory Corso once said of Peter's work, "Yeah, you made me see it." Peter's efforts have taken him from Naropa University in Boulder to San Francisco to where he now lives in the Santa Cruz Mountains, all the while tackling words on a page for various publications and performance groups. During a recent Thanksgiving retreat in Northern California at a Tibetan Buddhist center, Pema Oseling, I snuck away from the dinner dance party with Peter and fellow comrade Mark Olmsted to engage them in a conversation about their dual practices of poetry and Buddhism. Longtime friends, the two of them met in the 70s, working in the library at the San Francisco State University. The famed Allen Ginsberg once said of Mark, quote, "He inherited Burroughs' scientific nerve and Kerouac's movie-minded line nailed down with gold I-beam in San Francisco." Both Peter and Mark share a love for Allen Ginsberg. They were both his students, and Ginsberg inspired them spiritually.
Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche was Ginsberg's teacher, and really probably how a lot of us became aware of him was through Ginsberg's popularization of him. And the Naropa Institute was started by Trungpa, and he helped, he gave Ginsberg and Ann Wolman the poetry to school to start, and they started the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics. But I became aware of Ginsberg when I was 13. So, I mean, I saw him on television, and so this predated a lot of the Tibetan Buddhism. He was basically a Hindu at that point, and I was doing TM once I was 16.
That television show Mark Olmsted mentions is in fact the Merv Griffin Show, where his fascination for Ginsberg began.
Ginsberg, you know, in the late 60s, you know, I mean, he was in Life magazine and stuff like that. I mean, he was a big celebrity because he was a great soundbite. You know, even if you didn't like him, he was a character. So people were fascinated by this shaggy, strange, seemingly crazy guy. And then he would do things like, you know, read poetry that had homosexual obscenities in it and, you know, take his clothes off at readings and do all this wild stuff. So, you know, he's pretty fascinating. See, but, you know, when I was 13, that's like 1967, so he was quite a figurehead. He was a major spokesman of the hippie movement, so you couldn't open a L.A. Free Press without being aware of who Allen Ginsberg was, or Timothy Leary, or Alan Watts. You know, these were the main elders of that period, the main people that people were paying attention to.
And you mentioned his connection to Chogyam Trungpa. Can you remind me, you used a specific phrase to describe the ignition or the connection of Allen Ginsberg to Chogyam Trungpa.
Trungpa was his teacher. He was his introduction to formal Tibetan Buddhist practice. He met him in India, actually, in 63, didn't remember, and then met him again on the streets of New York in apparently around 1970, where they were both trying to flag the same cab. And as Ginsberg recalls, Trungpa's assistant was getting the cab, and Ginsberg's father was sick, and he was dying of cancer, and he tried to get him into the... He said you needed to get the cab first, and he literally said, "Excuse me, may I borrow your vehicle?" Which, of course, is very ironic, because the word vehicle, yana, is used in all three schools of Buddhism. And the Vajrayana is Tibetan Buddhism, or the so-called diamond vehicle. And then the assistant knew it was Ginsberg and introduced him to Trungpa, and vice versa. And Ginsberg said, "Oma hung Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum," which is the Sanskrit way of pronouncing that Tibetan mantra. And he asked Trungpa later, he said, what'd you think when I said that to you? And he said, I wondered if you knew what you were talking about. But that started their connection.
It also sparked your interest in poetry at that time. Did that inspire you into high school and college?
Absolutely. I actually was already writing poetry, but I hadn't come across his poetry. I came across, my brother showed me a poem that his friend had written, which actually was in a kind of imitation Howl style about New York. And my father, who was a character actor, but he also had a career in radio, had read Poe on vinyl and Ray Bradbury. And so I'd grown up listening to him read these things to me. And they're, you know, very language-oriented, and particularly Bradbury is very strongly metaphor and image-oriented. So when I heard this surrealist poem describing New York, I instantly got this metaphorical form. And I said, wow, I just like thought this was totally great. And I had no idea that it was Ginsberg. And then later when I saw Ginsberg's poetry, you know, like how, I said, oh, he got it from this. So I was like turned on to the form before I even knew Ginsberg. It was actually a friend, Richard Modiano, who turned me on to Ginsberg in particular. He was reading the LA Free Press, you know, which was a wild thing to do as a teenager. He was 15, I was 13. And he pointed out this interview with Ginsberg about ecology and acid. And, you know, I went, you know, he says, this guy's really interesting. And I went, I looked at it and went, hmm. And then I saw him on Merv Griffin. And I walked through the room and my mother was watching it and she was more than half in the bag. And,
I'm sorry, what does that mean?
I mean, she was drunk. And, you know, so Ginsberg is explaining to everyone on the talk show, he says, we are not our meat, he said. I remember this as I'm walking through and my mom's lying there drunk watching the television. And I thought, like, wow, what a cool thing to say. We are not our meat.
So, Peter, how about you when you were a preteen? And actually, Mark mentioned Richard Modiano, mm-hmm. who is a good friend of yours. So it sounds like an amazing inspiration for both of you.
Well, I was much later to come to poetry, actually. It took the more traditional romantic route for me, the broken heart and the sort of longing to communicate that to the...
Yeah, very sad. It was very sad, but... also very amazingly liberating, you know, to be around that kind of energy. I went to the memorial in San Francisco and, you know, everyone from Ferlinghetti and, you know, Diane DePrima and Anne Waldman. I mean, everyone came to read and perform. I actually sang Gospel Noble Truths. I got out my guitar and we handed out the lyrics and everyone sang along. It was very sweet because born in this world, you got to suffer. Everything changes. You got no soul. You know, singing his words that day was one of the greatest things I've ever experienced. I felt truly, truly like communicating with him, and it was very great. Sad, but in the best sense of the word, liberating sad.
Now, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, there's this idea of being reincarnated. Did he ever say or have ideas of what he was going to do next?
Well, I don't think he felt he could speculate in that regard. Gelug Rinpoche did perform what's known as a transference of consciousness, or POA for Alan, which he deemed to be successful, meaning that Alan became one with the vastness of clear, empty space. As such, he wouldn't have to come back, but knowing Alan, he probably would. Whether he'd be a poet again is another matter. But, I mean, like Chug Dutuku said, next time he came back, he was going to be a rock star. So who knows, you know.
He's out there already.
Yeah, anything is possible.
Well, I hope you get a chance to run into him again soon.
That would be very strange. But I would like that, yes. Hopefully. It might be disturbing. I don't know.
Well, I really thank you both for talking with me. And also, I hope you both continue to write and to help inspire the next generation.
Thank you. That's very sweet.
Yeah. Be great.
And I leave you with Mark Olmsted's band performing Bird Brain, featuring Allen Ginsberg. This is Julie Adler in Los Angeles. Thank you for listening.
Bird brain! Bird brain runs the world. Bird brain is the ultimate product of capitalism. Bird brain, chief bureaucrat of Russia, yawning. Bird brain ran the FBI 30 years, appointed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and never chased Cosa Nostra. Bird brain apportions wheat to be keep prices up on the world market. Bird brain lends money to developing nation police states through the world's bank. Bird brain never gets laid on his own. He depends on his office to pimp for him. Bird brain offers brain transplants in Switzerland. Bird brain wakes up in the middle of the night and arranges his sheets. I am bird brain. I rule Russia, Yugoslavia, England, Poland, Argentina, United States, El Salvador. Bird brain multiplies in China. Bird brain inhabits Stalin's corpse inside the Kremlin wall. Bird brain dictates petrochemical agriculture in Afric desert regions. Bird brain lowers North California's water table for Orange County agribusiness banks. Bird brain harpoons whales and chews blubber in the tropics. Bird brain clubs baby harp seals and wears their coats to Paris. The Pentagon. His brother runs the CIA. Fat ass bucks. Bird brain writes and edits Time, Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, City Lights, San Francisco Examiner. Bird brain is Pope, Premier, President, Commissar, Chairman, Senator. Bird brain voted Reagan President of the United States. Bird brain prepares Wonder Bread with refined white flour. Bird brain sold slaves, sugar, tobacco, alcohol. Bird brain sent 20 million intellectuals and Jews to Siberia. 15 million never got back to the Stray Dog Cafe. Bird brain wore a mustache and ran Germany on amphetamines the last years of World War II. Bird brain conceived the final solution to the Jewish problem of Europe. Bird brain carried it out in gas chambers. Bird brain manufactured guns in the Holy Land and sold them to white boys in South Africa. Bird brain supplied helicopters to Central American generals to kill a lot of restless Indians. He wanted to encourage a favorable business climate. Bird brain began a war of terror against Israeli Jews. Bird brain sent Zionist planes to shoot Palestinian huts over Beirut. Bird brain outlawed opiates on the world market. Bird brain formed the black market in opium. Bird brain's father shot Skag in the hallways of the Lower East Side. Bird brain organized Operation Condor to spray poison fumes on the marijuana fields of Sonora. Bird brain got sick in Harvard Square from smoking Mexican grass. In Europe to conquer cockroaches with propaganda. Bird brain became a great international poet and went around the world praising the glories of bird brain. Bert Brain isn't evil. He just don't talk good. He's sympathetic. I declare Bert Brain victor in the poetry contest. He built the World Trade Center in New York Harbor without regard with the toilets emptied. Bert Brain in Iraq attacked Bert Brain in Iran. Bert Brain in Belfast throws bombs at his mother's ass. Bert Brain began jumping down the Amazon rainforest to build a wood pulp factory on the Amazon riverbank. Bert Brain invented the theory of relativity so that the Rockwell Corporation could build neutron bombs in Rocky Flats, Colorado. Bert Brain's going to see how long he can go without coming. Bert Brain thinks his dong will grow big that way. Bert Brain became a Buddha by meditating. Bert Brain found out he was a Buddha by meditating. Bert Brain's afraid he's gonna blow up the planet, so he built this rocket to get away.